This is the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast for August 26th, 2013. My name is Drew Messenger Michaels. Welcome to the show. Today I'm talking to Jake Kasdahl, best known to me at least, originally, for his participation in beloved games of the PS2 and Dreamcast era like Rez, Space Channel 5 Part 2, but also he is the CEO and co-founder of 17-Bit, who made Skulls of the Shogun. On that game he was the art lead, story lead, director, art director, probably some other stuff as well. Level designer, let's not forget level designer. It was kind of his baby, as he says in the interview. And he talks to me a little bit about the design of it, and of other games that have inspired him, and just stuff he's into. He was gracious enough to be in our first episode, and as such, before we get to the interview, I would like to address the small matter of what it is that you just downloaded, or what it is that you're streaming. What is this thing? This is the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast. It goes along with the Everybody's Talking at Once blog, which I started in 2009. My buddy and partner in blog crimes, Lucio, joined on not too long ago, and we're going to be sort of exploring... what exactly? I would have been pretty comfortable not too long ago saying geek culture. We're going to explore the outer reaches of geek culture. But the word geek is at an interesting moment, I think. It refers to people who are into superheroes and zombies and stuff, fantasy, whatever. That's a perfectly reasonable and useful use of the word, useful use of the word. You know what I mean. But I've gradually realized that what I mean when I say I want to talk about geek culture is something a bit different from that. So give me 5 minutes, and I think I can explain what it is I'm talking about and what it is I'm up to here. This will not, by the way, be a debate about what the true meaning of the word geek is, or about drawing lines as to who is and isn't a real geek, or about any of those semantically fraught terms like what's a game or what's art or any of those things. I don't really care about any of that, and I don't think those discussions tend to be all that useful, frankly. But I think this particular term, geek culture, has a lot to say about where we're at right now as citizens of the internet. But so we're at this interesting moment right now where I guess the quickest way to say it is that The Avengers is a mainstream popular film, or was, and Game of Thrones is a mainstream popular TV series. And they are about superheroes and wormholes and, you know, semi-medieval politics and ice zombies, respectively. Let's not forget dragons. So that's geeky stuff, but it doesn't belong to the subcultural fringes that the word geek has traditionally implied. And then on the other side of that coin, media that we've sort of long consigned to outright geekiness, like comics and games, have become mature enough and have gained enough breadth and frankly have just become interesting enough that they no longer fit comfortably under the umbrella of geek culture. Not all of them do anyway. So geekery in its subcultural configuration doesn't apply to all games or all books or all movies. We're pretty comfortable saying it doesn't apply to all books or all movies. I think we're at the point where we're having to admit that it doesn't apply to all games. That's causing friction. But in the long run, I think it is a very good thing. Now, that configuration of geek is subcultural. There's another configuration of geeks that I think is utopian, basically. Let me explain what I mean by that. The idea of being a geek to me, as I was growing up, this is sort of how I thought about it. The idea is that you can be into weird shit, and you can be into weird combinations of shit, and rather than that being a source of alienation or shame, that's an impetus to explore even more weird shit, to make things, to learn about things, to just make the whole world your own. This is the cultural figure of the movie geek, or the lit geek, someone who is not into just certain kinds of movies or books, usually, but who is interested in exploring the whole world of movies and books, and of the things that movies and books lead them to. I worry a little bit that as the subcultural version of a geek enters the mainstream, more or less, as dragon shows become popular across the board, we may lose the utopian form of geekery a little bit. It's great again that people can be into the Avengers and Game of Thrones, and I like both of those things a great deal. But I think that if all we really accomplish with the for lack of a better word or a less ugly word, the geekification of culture, if all we accomplish with that is that we widen the mainstream 3/4 of an inch, but we lose the central insight of being a geek, which is that we don't need a mainstream, then we haven't gained much. Right, the central insight of geekery isn't that dragons are cool. Now, dragons are cool, but that isn't the central insight of so-called geek culture. The central insight of geek culture, rather, is that we don't need a mainstream when we have an internet. That was, to me, what growing up geeky, if you want to put it that way, was all about. It was about realizing that the whole world was available to me in a way that it has never been available to any previous generation of humans. That sounds like hyperbole, but it's literally true. And podcasting is one important aspect of that. You know, the power of getting to sit down with somebody who's made something interesting or who has some interesting ideas and having a conversation with them. That's what I hope to do here. So I guess the idea is to be the best geek I can. I want to practice the kind of inclusive, multivarious, limitless interest in all sorts of weird shit that I grew up thinking was worthwhile and a suitable alternative to the idea of cultural consensus. That all sounds pretty grandiose. In effect, it just means we're going to talk to people who are making cool stuff about cool stuff. That's the sheepish version. You've heard the grandiose version. Without further ado, let me give you a taste of what's to come. I hope you'll join me as I keep doing these. Our very first interview, here it is, Jake Kasdahl of 17-Bit. Were you writing something, or was that a visual test?
No, it's my Cintiq tablet.
Nice.
Scrambling some stuff here.
Cool.
I'm ready to go now, yeah.
Cool, all right. So again, thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it. It's actually, I was looking into your history, your origin story, and it's possible we talked before, though my voice would have been higher and we would have been talking about Chippendale's Rescue Rangers and I would have been paying by the minute, because you were a game counselor for a while, right?
Yeah, back in the day. NES days.
Yeah, that's when I might have been calling. So there's a lot to talk about with Skull. Some of it is kind of inside baseball. Why radiuses instead of grids and things like that. But the first thing I'd love to talk about is just the aesthetic, right? It's one of those games where you kind of take everything at face value while it's happening. Like, yeah, Tanuki monks and all this stuff. But if you stop and kind of think about what's going on with the eating of skulls and the going up against the powers that be, it's pretty kind of dark and heavy. Is that sort of why you went with a more cartoonish style, or was it more just a right turn from your previous work with concept art and stuff?
The visual style kind of followed, or the visual style was established before any of the story stuff was really established. It was going to be quite a bit more serious, actually, the story stuff. But once the look was established, we kind of threw in some temporary dialogue, and it was really stupid. We were throwing stuff in, we were just kind of measuring beats of time and stuff like that, kind of how much stuff we were explaining to the player. And, as we were testing it, people were like, this dialogue is great. And we're like, no, this is garbage. We're totally going to throw all this away and do it for real. And they're like, no, you should keep this. So enough people in a row kept complaining about me wanting to throw it away. So we ended up sort of embracing the goofy and going deep on it. So,
yeah. No, I mean, the goofy works because, again, because there are those more serious elements, it keeps it from being oppressive or operatic, right? I talked to Greg Kasavin one time, and I know he felt like if Bastion had all been serious, if it had all been sort of the Calamity and stuff, it wouldn't have worked, you know? So, like, that kind of push and pull, I think, works in Skulls.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of inherently dark subject matter. I mean, it's like the afterlife, and this guy's been betrayed and killed in life, betrayed in death as well. And so offsetting that with just this kind of goopy, campy look and, I wanted to have fun. I'd been doing really kind of serious, dark sci-fi concept art for years, and I was ready to just do something totally different. So it was really good. I was really, really embraced just going back to making cartoons. I hadn't done stuff like that since I was in cartoon school way back in the day.
Yeah. Is there something to, a unit or a class-based game being cartoony so you instantly know what you're looking at? Or was it literally just a tonal thing from the start?
It was a tonal thing. Just, I wanted to do a cartoon samurai. I wanted to do something that was simple enough that I could do all the art myself. you know, if they started going into really kind of detailed artwork for everybody, it would be just a bunch more work because I was trying to do it all on my own. So, you know, I kind of, as the lead artist and the art director simultaneously, I was really keen on doing, establishing a look that I could sort of handle, you know, all on my own. Basically, that was the biggest driving factor.
And you, I mean, you were more than that, right? You designed a bunch of the levels. You did the kind of the lead design thing. You wore many hats.
It was kind of my, you know, my baby. It was, you know, pretty much the lead designer. I mean, we all talked a lot about, you know, the fine details and tuning and everything, but a lot of just the concepts were stuff that I was thinking about. And, you know, I played a lot every day. I'd just be playing and playing and playing. And I'd be like, you know, this would be smoother if we did this, or wouldn't it be cool if we could kind of get this sort of thing going? And, you know, once you get going on the project, they start to sort of almost speak for themselves. They sort of tell you what they want. I mean, it sounds weird, but sometimes I feel like I'm just a medium. I just kind of write down the ideas that come flowing in after I've been playing. And I really enjoy it, though. You know, I'd always been an artist, an animator, concept artist, and I never had a big design role. I'd always been known to really want to be a part of the design discussions during, you know, their studios I worked at. And people seem to appreciate that. But this was the first time I was like, hey, no, I really want to do the design and the art. So
It's one of those designs where it escalates in a really smart way. I found myself thinking over and over, like, were these early levels designed last? Because there's like an immediate sense of where it's going, but you roll out the mechanics in a pretty kind of deliberate, friendly, you know, pace.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time on the opening. I mean, we, you know, we were doing lots of trade shows and PAXs and stuff and teaching people how to play. And one of the three core guys, Ben, he really sort of embraced that whole opening part and really sort of spent a lot of time tuning and balancing and, you know, spending a lot of time on the pacing and how long was too long before you taught the next thing and, you know, make sure people kind of get reinforced on it. And, you know, we spent an incredible amount of time on just that, those first couple of levels, just like people's first touch into the game and making sure they really like it and understand what's going on. And, you know, I remember when it started coming online, it was like, wow, we don't have to teach everybody every single thing about the game now. Like the game will walk you through it. And we're like, wow, this is fantastic. You know, I'm really glad that we're doing this. So doing the same sort of thing now with our new game, Galaxy, kind of spending a lot of effort just kind of getting that first taste so people can just jump in and start playing as soon as possible without needing to be shepherded through everything.
So can you talk at all about the next project? I think you mentioned a while back it was something that had been like an idea in the pipeline even before Skulls got started.
No, it's, I mean, Skulls has been around for 4.5 years now. I mean, I started 4.5 years on it. So this is definitely newer than that. But I mean, it's just something I think thematically I've been drawn to for a long time. I've been collecting these old art books from these old animes from the 70s and 80s. Every time I went to Japan or when I was living there, I have just stacks of them. These classic, here, I can show you one. Just kind of like books full of, you know, all the Gundam characters. And I kind of really like the cheesy old, you know, flight outfits, all this kind of stuff. And I've been collecting this stuff for years. And so when I was thinking about, you know, the theme for the next game, you know, I kind of decided I wanted to do a spaceship game. I knew right away that I wanted to do this kind of this campy 70s, early 80s throwback look. I've been noodling on that for a long time, even during Skulls. You know, I'd find stuff that I liked, I just threw it in a big folder, and I'd always have this reference stuff and kind of kept thinking about it. So you let it stew. A lot of the stuff needs to stew for a long time.
So cheesy flight suit stuff, awesome. Why Samurai in this case? Was that part of the original idea, or did sort of the idea of a strategy game come first?
The idea of a strategy game was first, and a friend of mine were kind of thinking about doing this on our own, and we were kind of thinking about how we could, you know, separate the grid and get rid of some of that stuff and kind of start off with the sort of zombie vampire thing briefly. And then he decided that he was going to move out of the city and move back to Montreal and join Ubisoft again. So he left and I was like, all right, well then I'm, you know, I still want to do something on my own, but that zombie idea was kind of his idea and I wanted to do something I was more, you know, personally in tune with. So decided I really wanted to do sort of samurais and, you know, that whole, you know, it's just very clean. Like, you get swords, the archers, like, it's this kind of battlefields, like, this will work great. And then while I was kind of brainstorming all that stuff, I was like, you know, what would be cooler than samurai? Or, like, what could possibly be cooler than samurai would be dead samurai. So that kind of came on pretty quickly. And as soon as we opened up the path to dead samurai, then you get the afterlife, and you can have all kinds of magic using units, and you don't have to explain things realistically. Like, you know, you can just kind of have this whole playground now to play with where nothing has to make sense necessarily. And, you know, I'd spent a lot of time in Japan, and I really liked that aesthetic, and I really liked, you know, old Japanese anime, and it all kind of just tied together. And I really liked that poppy look, those old kind of 60s anime cartoons, and you know, once I started looking more at that stuff, I realized that this is, you know, kind of simple, iconic characters. I mean, we kind of started it with the iPhone, you know, in mind, and we switched kind of quickly onto Xbox. But I wanted these guys to be able to read at a small size, and that's why their shapes are pretty simple. Like, you know, not a lot of detail work on them. It's all about kind of the really poppy sort of iconic read.
Yeah, the details that are there are great, though. I mean, when I, you know, when I saw the Fox Monk doing sutras and stuff, that was a moment of great appreciation. So,
we spent a lot of time on those animations. I mean, you know, probably more than we should have, but me and my animator here, Kaylin, kind of took over about 2/3 of the way through the project and kind of filled in a bunch of the last stuff. But we had a lot of time with that, a lot of fun with that. I mean, you know, it makes a big difference, I think, the amount of character and personality in the little units. Like, when you're looking at them and you're seeing if they're going to, you know, counterattack or not, like, you don't really need to look at stats so much. It's all through the visual communication of sort of, you know, where the player's eye is looking. Like, all he needs to do is look at the guy and understand what's going on immediately, and that's really important.
So I will ask, the radius thing as opposed to a grid, why did that lend itself to the undead? Because you said it started with zombies. Is that to make it feel more shambling, or...?
No, nothing to do with that. Just, you know, there's a real, I don't know what the word is. There's a clunk, I guess. It's kind of clunky. I mean, this big grid stuff, and, like, you can only attack the guy that's directly above you or directly behind you, inside of you. And, you know, we were just thinking, like, why does it need that? Why is that necessary? Why could you not just have something a little bit faster paced, a little bit more organic, just kind of visually understandable? Like, all right, he's in this radius. That means I can attack him. You know, after we sort of kind of went deep into this, people were like, oh, there's already games that have done this. There was a PS2 game or PS1, some Japanese strategy game. Phantom Brave, is that it? I forget. It's one of those things. I had never played it before and I'd never seen it. But, I mean, there have been other titles that have done it. But even then, that game had, like, all these layers of menus and all this kind of stuff. We were just trying to do something really fast-paced and simple. And so just sort of stripping out as much as we could of this unnecessary sort of parts of the path. You know, if you grab a guy, I want to hit that guy, hit the button again, boom. Like, that's it.
Was that minimalism kind of all good, or do you feel like you maybe missed out on any layers of complexity by starting with something like the iPhone in mind?
No, I think we are very happy with how it ended up. It's actually really hard for me to play other strategy games now. Like, they're so clunky. There's so many unnecessary steps and everything's very, you know, black and white. There's no sort of from the hip ambiguity at all. It's just very much like, all right, I'm going to move 2 squares that way. And I know that he can attack 3 squares. So as long as I stay 2 squares back, like, I know he can't hit me. And, you know, it's just like, gah, gah, gah. It's like a lot of processing data that, you know, I'm not a big fan of. I'm pretty, you know, ADD, like, my stuff fast-paced, and I wanted to do a strategy game. I was like, we don't need to do all this stuff. You can get the same basic experience without all this calculation. You can just sort of visualize it. I mean, I'm a very visual thinker, so that's kind of just my go-to, you know, standard for stuff like this anyway.
No, actually, I mean, I for sure have the experience of not being able to play other strategy games since I started playing Skulls. It's an experience I've only really had once before, which was with Frozen Synapse. After I tried that, everything felt really slow and plodding, and I got to wait for the other guy to think when I've already thought and that kind of thing. So it's, there seems to be a trend in speeding things up and cutting out the fat, which is tough because some people really like the fat. You know what I mean? Some people want
to. But I think there's always going to be games like Civ and all these huge, complex strategy games for people who love to just dive into those things and chew it up and just totally go to town. That's fine. I never play those games. I don't have near the patience. So this is meant for people on the other side of the spectrum.
Yeah, totally, totally. Paradox is still making games and all that stuff. So is the team makeup different on the new game? Are you still sort of taking the lead on design stuff? Or is somebody else in the studio?
Yeah, actually, so largely Skulls was me and Ben and Baruch. We were all teammates at EA. We'd worked together on the Spielberg project. And so when I moved back up to Seattle, I was art directing at Zombie Studios, and I brought Baruch on first. It was the two of us for a while. And then Ben lived down the street from Baruch in L.A. in Venice Beach, and kind of saw the project and was like, hey, this looks really cool. Can I jump in too? And we're like, yeah, sure. He's a really good engineer and designer. And so three of us did that for a while. And then my friend Paul came on. He also moved up from L.A. and kind of came on as sort of the studio manager and some of the tech stuff. And then we've kind of expanded a bit since then. So for the last half of Skulls or so, we sort of expanded a couple more people. And Colin's smiling at me. My old friend Colin joined us a couple of years in. And he did a bunch of stuff. And then Kaylin, like I said, the animator came on. And then we've got some new guys now. And then Ben and Baruch are both actually going on to do their own things next. So the original sort of team, I guess, doesn't stand as much anymore. Like, we're still all partners in Skulls and we're still good friends, but everybody wants to do their own thing. I really want to move back to Japan, and I don't want to have remote overseas development. Like, remote development on its own is a pain in the butt, but being in a different time zone and trying to overlap would just be a nightmare. So Brute's going on to do his own thing next, and Ben has been working on a bunch of small scale, kind of cool independent stuff. He's working with there's a group, a collective, I forget the name of it right now, down in LA, that's doing a bunch of cool indie stuff.
Is that LA Game Space, or is that one?
That's one of the things he's involved with. So, we're all just in touch, planning out future versions and stuff like that. But everybody's kind of moving on to their own thing. So 17-Bit, as the studio, still stands with the same core group after those guys. We have some new engineers now, and another friend just joined up from EA. My friend Raj, who's a producer with me on the Command & Conquer team, we decided it was time that we needed an adult in here somewhere. So we got a producer finally who's helping to manage things and kind of, you know, help me to keep my plate clear, because I'm the CEO, I'm the director, I'm the lead artist, I'm the art director, sort of lead designer, and I was doing everything else too, like all the scheduling and budgeting and all that kind of stuff. Getting a lot of the stuff off my plate has been a huge help, and so. But, you know, in effect, it's very much a 17-bit game, and I think it feels similar to Skulls in a lot of ways. I mean, it's a totally different genre, obviously, but it's, you know, me getting to do what I want, which is pretty awesome. I mean, it's a lot of work, but I'm having a lot of fun, and this is definitely what I want to do with my life. So definitely found that spot. We just got to find a way to get one of these games on sale. Skulls was definitely way too long. Like, we're trying to get Galaxy done in, like, half that time, so...
So give me the elevator pitch for it's called Galaxy 8. I'm sorry, I should know this better than I do.
Galaxy.
Okay. Yeah. It's funny. I haven't seen too much material around on it. So let me help you get the word out. Give me the pitch for Galaxy.
Galaxy is a love letter to spaceship games of my youth. I grew up playing things like Defender and Asteroids and Joust and Centipede and Tempest, these kind of things. And this game is really sort of a visit back in time to that sort of side-scrolling space adventure genre, but, you know, being done with sort of really cutting-edge modern artificial intelligence. We're teaming up with this company called Syntiot that's a new middleware company doing high-end AI stuff. So we've got really detailed, kind of complex AI behaviors, kind of more something similar to like Far Cry 3 or Halo 4 or something like that. And it's kind of this open-worldy sort of, you know, and we're still nailing down a bunch of stuff, but it's a very unique game. It's kind of a bit of GTA, a bit of Halo, a bit of Far Cry, and quite a bit of, like, Asteroids. So it's kind of a funny new thing that we're working on.
And, so wait, we should have... Yeah, wow, that's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah. I mean, the first thing I thought of was V, the way you could, kind of open world explore in two dimensions in the hub world there. I don't know if it looks or feels similar to that at all, but it just like a lot of emergent behavior sounds like kind of the bread and butter here.
A lot of emergent behavior, a lot of interactable environment stuff. I'm trying to think of even a good parallel. I mean, GTA in a sense where, you know, you get spotted by a cop and you're out doing something wrong and the heat kind of rises and rises until you're like scrambling everywhere trying to shake these guys.
Sure, yeah.
And there's kind of like, you know, there's a RPG elements of leveling up your guy, and it's kind of this big grand space adventure, but it looks like, you know, R-Type 3 or something like that.
That's
so
awesome. Yeah.
Or Gradient. There should be a lot more to go. We have our first trailer launched about a week ago, something like that. And we're in the new Game Informer. We've got 4 pages, actually a nice feature in the new Game Informer right next to our buddies from Below, the game Below from the Cappy Games guys are good friends of ours. So it's kind of cool, a big PS4 and a big Xbox One title kind of featured for the big indie stuff coming up. I'm sorry, where were we going with this?
I have no idea. I think I was just asking you about the new game. Because again, like I saw the trailer, but I haven't seen a whole lot of other material around about it. So I was curious for me, and I figured it'd be a good, you know, a good chance for you to get the word out, so... Cool. So we've been going 20 minutes. I know you're super busy. If you need to go, that is all good.
I could do another question or two.
I'm having a good time. I'm glad you are. So I've, you know, your the website and like other interviews and stuff have been pretty good on your influences in the game world. You know, I know Skulls was inspired by Advance Wars and other stuff like that. Aside from anime and that kind of visual stuff, what are your bags outside of the world of games? Like, do you have other obsessions that the world has yet to find out about? That maybe will show up in later games or elsewhere?
You mean visually?
Visually, aesthetically, tonally, whatever, you know? Because, like, there's that serious streak to some of your other work, but then there's that wacky streak in Skulls, and it makes me wonder what else is bouncing around.
Yeah, I tend to like pop, cartoon. I mean, I have a lot of retro stuff. I have, like, I love these old Tomy robots from the 80s. I have tons of, you know, little action figures. And I mean, I like a lot of the stuff that I grew up with, obviously. Love late 70s and early 80s stuff. I love just sort of designing things. Like, this is a Buddha that turns into a speaker, you know, like this kind of stuff. It's just awesome. I have hundreds and hundreds of these things, and I don't have time to show you all of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like sort of pop, urban vinyl design. I like, you know, just sort of pop art, I guess, any sort of modern pop art. You know, you see a lot of that when you're in Japan. But when I was in Europe, too, there's a ton of it. The really cool graffiti and stuff like that. Amsterdam was fantastic for that. Not a whole lot of that stuff here in Seattle.
I live in Chicago, and they've done their best to eradicate it here, too. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just, any sort of really cool visual, you know, independent art like that tends to really catch my eye. That's why I love Tokyo and Japan so much. You walk around, stuff is just everywhere. Like, it's just bombarded with original shapes and designs. And they like the really sort of simple character designs, which is a real art. I mean, I've learned it's easier to make something really more complicated than something that really reads really well, really simply.
Yeah.
Other than that, no, I don't have a lot of time. I mean, I'm working on these projects, and I've got two little kids, two little boys. So sort of introducing them to Star Wars and Legos and stuff like that takes up pretty much most of my free time. And then when they go to sleep, I either go back to work or I do a little bit, you know, I've been doing a lot of Steam kind of indie PC gaming lately.
Nice.
That's kind of where I find a lot of my muses right now.
It's the most generic question in the world, but what have you been playing?
Lately, I can't stop playing Rogue Legacy.
I devoured that game. I did New Game Plus and New Game Plus Plus, and now I'm so powerful it doesn't even matter. Like, that game was great.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. It's just, I have a hard time putting it down. Like, most of the time, like, I'll play a game, like, one night or two nights, and I'm like, God, there's, like, 20 other games I want to check out, so, like, that'll be it, you know, and I rarely finish games, and I haven't finished Rogue Legacy yet, but I just keep playing it. Like, there's really no good place to put it down. I've noticed they probably engineered that in. Like, you're like, well, you know, I'm already this far. I'm like, I'll just do one more.
Here's what I always do. I die, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll just spend my money. I'll just pick an upgrade, and then I'll stop. And then I'm like, oh, but I'm standing in front of the castle.
You may as well go back in.
Yeah.
And so I keep playing. And it's ridiculous. But I think they did a really good job with it. And I've read some of the reviews. They're like, oh, the play control's not very good. It's not good for a game like this. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm so in the zone with that thing. Like, I feel like the play control is almost perfect. Like, it's just, you get so good at it where you're not even thinking anymore. It becomes just like a total zen state. You know, I'm just like jumping around off stuff and bouncing around and, you know, just rushing in and doing these like perfectly timed attacks on guys. And I mean, I think it feels fantastic. I don't know what those reviewers are talking about.
I got a really good friend. We usually see eye to eye on pretty much everything with games. And he can't stand the controls. He can't stand that I think that mages still have swords. Little things like that bug the heck out of him. But I don't know what it is, because to me it feels perfect as well, but that's an interesting thing about games, though, right? Like, sometimes the control scheme or just, like, the sound of the character's feet hitting the ground or whatever just either clicks with you or doesn't, and it can be hard to account for.
Apparently, yeah. I don't know. I've had a couple of people didn't really take it as much as I have, but I don't know. There's so much stuff these days now on Steam. I mean, you know, like, you can pretty much buy a new game every Friday night and sit down and just, you know, go to town on it, but you know, I try to balance my game playing time between stuff that I want to be playing and stuff that I want to just check out, and then stuff that I feel like I kind of have to be looking at, you know, like competitive analysis and kind of like paying attention to other trends going on. I mean, it's a big responsibility to be in charge of a studio and, you know, kind of trying to chart the path for the next couple of years. We've already got our next game sort of half charted out after this one, too. So hopefully we're going to get to a cadence where we're delivering something at least every 2 years or so, which would be a lot faster than every 4.5 years like we did with Skulls.
4.5 is a long time, for sure.
Way too long. I mean, we learned so much. We built the studio up. We learned how all this stuff works. You know, we've established all these business contacts, and we you know, we're players in the game now. Before, we didn't really know what we were doing. We were kind of crashing around. And all those years in AAA, they helped with some of the production stuff, but really, there's just so much new stuff to learn when you're doing your own project that, you know, we were kind of starting from the ground floor again, it felt like.
Yeah, because half the stuff you're doing is stuff that NEA would be taken care of, you know, by a department. Yeah. You have no contact with a person, right? You've never met, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, like, I never met, you know, any of the marketing group or anything like that. I mean, like, our producer would have some crossover with that stuff, but on our level, nothing like that. Yeah.
Yeah, which is what a producer does, and that's why it's great you have one now, right? Like, it amazes me how many indie teams manage to be successful with no producer. Like, that's one of the most impressive things that I think people don't maybe grasp, is, like, there's nobody making sure everything gets done. It just, like, it gets done or it doesn't.
Right. Yeah, no, it feels a lot less organic now. Like, we actually have a plan, and we're sticking to it, and, you know, a much better chance of this game shipping on time than Skulls did. Did I mention it was 4.5 years?
yeah, I believe you did, but, yeah. Cool. Well, that, like, the Bonafide Edition is awesome. I like the extra chapter a lot. You know, having an extra monk in there is cool. The Tanuki's a blast. It's really, really cool. Is that stuff coming to the other platforms, or is that just in the Steam version? The previous platforms. I mean, I know you said there's going to be other stuff later, perhaps.
Yeah, all the... oh, no, it won't be coming to the other platforms. No, it was, you know, it was all built for the Steam version. It's a lot of work still to, you know, to go through all the... I mean, we were already on all these different platforms. We're technically on 4 platforms for the Microsoft stuff. And so going through Cert and Ganon and all that stuff, and there's a lot of cost and stuff.
Yeah, it was involved. It was phone, tablet, Windows 8, and the Xbox, right? So that's...
And the tablet, there's two. There's the... You know, the Win RT and then the regular tablet, and they're actually different operating systems.
And the phone, Well, the phone's not XNA, is it? It's or the phone is XNA, but
the phone is XNA, and nothing else is.
Got it. Oh, geez, I don't think I realized that. Okay, nice, nice. Anyway, didn't mean to drag you down that particular rabbit hole again, but because again, I'm sure this is all anybody asked about for a while there, and I'm sure it was less than fun because you made an awesome game and you wanted to talk about that. Yeah, so it's funny, you talk about competitive analysis. If you have time for one more question, would you say there's anything out there that you would compare to this thing you're working on? You know, I mean, there's the roguelike likes with the emergent behavior and gameplay, and it's different every time kind of stuff, but from what you describe, you know, it doesn't sound like anything I've heard of.
There's bits and pieces in different games. You know, I think the roguelike stuff in Rogue Legacy's done really well, and, you know, their shop has done really well. You know, I really like the key game stuff, like their side scroller and the pixel junk shooter stuff. I think it's really good. But again, that's kind of more just kind of like, you know, classic arcade stuff. I mean, they did a really good job of revisiting it and providing some new stuff, which is cool because I think this genre is sort of being left behind lately. But all the stuff that we're trying to pull into this thing, like, no, I don't really have anything directly to compare it to, which is good. It's fun. I've spent most of my career working on weird shit that never really had anything to look at. Like when I was working on Space Channel 5 and when I was working on Res, like, we didn't really know what we were doing, so there was nothing to look at and be like, well, this is how they handled this problem. It's like, no, like, you got to just kind of cook your way out of your own little box here. Same with Skulls too. I mean, Skulls, you know, once it started kind of opened up, it was kind of a Pandora's box. You know, there was all this cool stuff we could do, but there was really nothing to look at to kind of like judge if we were doing the right thing or how things were working. We had to just sort of figure it out ourselves, and it took a lot of time, yeah, but it was fun. I mean, I'm really proud of that game. I'm proud that it's different, and I'm proud that it reviewed so well, and people seem to really enjoy it. So,
yeah, I know I can't stop playing it, but that's just me. So, well, it's just me and some friends, and yeah, and it's, I don't know, there's all these awesome things that happen. Like, I had a friend who hadn't played, and I let him get a Crow Monk, and he didn't know what it did. And I didn't know what it did because this was when we just got in the game, and he proceeded to blow my general off the ledge after this, you know, hour-long battle of attrition and terrible. It was awesome. Like, neither of us could be mad or anything because it was just that much fun. So
yeah, the Crow stuff, it's kind of like the Tanuki. There's some serious high level stuff in there. The Crow is like really interesting when you know you think you've got this perfect plan, and then you'll see your enemy like use a Crow to gust another unit closer to you than you thought he would ever be able. Like, you know panned it out. You're like, all right, he can't possibly get to me next turn, so it's fine. But if that Crow comes up and gusts him over there, all of a sudden he can sneak in and bust your whole plan up, and you're like, you can't help it. Like, you know, give him a little golf tap. You're like, nice done, man. I didn't see that coming. Good
That's
job.
The Crow Monk. I get mad sometimes, but not with the Crow Monk. With the Crow Monk, I'm just amazed that can happen in a game. So that's always fun.
Yeah, no, even when we were doing a lot of high-level play within, you know, on our own here, there would always be some thing. People were like, wow, I can't believe you just pulled that off. I can't believe you thought that far ahead. That's awesome. You deserve to win this game. Okay, cool.
Totally. Yeah, it's a game that's really big on earned victories, which I appreciate.
Yes.
So. Cool. Well, I can't thank you enough for your time. Anything else you want to plug? I imagine all your energy is just in the next game right now.
Yeah, we're deep in the next game. You should see an announcement tomorrow, actually, about what we're up to. So keep an eye out for that. And I'm Jay Kooza on Twitter, JKOOZA. And we also have 17_bit. It's the company one. So, yeah, follow along here if you are interested in this kind of weird stuff that we do.
Gotta love weird stuff. Thank you again. Have a great one.
All right, cheers, man. Thanks.
Later.
See ya.
So that's the show. If you haven't checked out Skulls of the Shogun, definitely check it out. It's a pretty fantastic game. Imagine chess if your king and your queen were the same piece, and also they are dead samurai. Yeah. Anyway, great game. I realize I didn't, by the way, explain the whole platform drama thing. They launched on a whole bunch of platforms that weren't Steam, and now they're finally on Steam. That's the long and short of it. So the bona fide edition, it's called. Har har. Check it out. In future episodes of this podcast, Lucio joins the fun, and I pontificate a little less. Talk to people a little more. So thanks for listening. See you next time.
So is this going to be like a podcast or something?